Feminist is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Tonight our speaker is Al Lackey. I met Al 8 years ago when I came in. I met him, I used to go to the Tuesday morning group at the Aaron Club. And when he would comment, he would always end his comments with this one thing that if you don't pick up the first drink, come hell or high water, you could stay sober today. And I can't tell you how many times that's kept me away from that first drink, just that thought. And I'll give you Al.
Overhitch Kennedy if it flies off. Thank you. My name is Al, and I am an alcoholic. This was the first meeting that I ever attended. However, some guy decided to sponsor me. He never told me what Alcoholics Anonymous was about, except that come hell or high water, you SOB, you don't take the first drink. Well, it seems to me that that must be true because I have got, this is starting, I'm my 40th year of continuous sobriety. It's just starting. It can't be 40 years until October comes around. But anyhow, I was impressed with this group because nobody talked to me. I guess because of how I smelled. It could be a reason. But I'll tell you one thing that I did meet. I didn't know there was so damn many insurance men in AA. Well, I didn't know nothing about AA either. But everybody that shook my hands was an insurance man. And the reason I didn't come back was because they said that the night before when they drugged me into a meeting, which I... But I had 15 cents to buy a pack of Luckies. They were then 12 cents a pack. And this guy that took me in, this basket comes around and he put a quarter in it. And a momentary and a quick flash, I said, what the hell I got? I only got 15 cents and no cigarettes. Well, he gave me the damn basket. He didn't say, don't put anything in it, Al, or I'll put a quarter in for you. He could well afford it, but... So I threw my last pack of cigarettes in the basket, 12 cents. And the next Wednesday, I never forget it. I had a hell of a time to buy a borrow 50 cents. And my sister did loan me 50 cents. So what am I doing? I'm coming back to King School. I hear a very nice lead. And I'll never forget the two guys that got up and said, we're broke. Now we don't want to hear any tinkle, 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 tinkle in the basket when you go out, it's up by the door. All we want to see is flutter, 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 flutter. And I said, the hell with that SOB, so I never put the 50 cents in either. But one of the greatest things that I ever had happen to me in my life was the various people that would tell me what to do. And that was everything. And so that began my introduction into Alcoholics Anonymous. So I could really say that King School was the first group that I ever attended in myself. Of course, it was the second day I was in AA, too. How the hell I even seen how to get on a bus, I don't know. And worse, how the hell I got back, I don't know, because I lived in Barber. But I'm glad that all those things happened, because they taught me that come hell or high water, USOB, you don't take the first drink. And that became more or less the thing that I hung on to. But meetings was the important thing. I went to meetings every time I could, or every moment I could get to one. And I worked third shift anyhow, and B&W gave me back my job after I'd been fired about 18 times, or maybe 19 times, I don't know how the hell many times. They said that I had been sober 2 weeks, and that was good enough for them. So I stayed with them for several years more before I got out in public life or into the business world. But I have to talk about me. I traveled for a living. In other words, I was a traveling salesman. And in my first year, I never missed a Barberton meeting. Even if I'd have to drive a couple of hundred miles, I'd be back in Barberton that day and that night for a meeting. Well, something strange happened. When you're on the road and you go to meetings, you hear a lot of people. Well, fortunately, this trip that I made east, I heard Mose Yoder 33 times. And here I come into Barberton to go to a meeting because I never miss my home group. And I call up my sponsor, I said, who's leading? He said, Mose Yoder. And now for the first time, I had a little independence. I looked in a world directory, I'd bought one, and there was a meeting in Worcester. And I thought, well, now, there's a printer down there that I haven't talked to lately. And I'll just go down early in the afternoon and I'll find out where that meeting was. Well, Amishman, I kind of held in awe, you know what I mean? I didn't know much about that. But I just a little bit off. And so I was watching my cussing because I was a I was a prolific cusser, and sometimes if I get mad, I don't think I knew or know a hell of a lot about stopping yet. But I'm trying, that's 40 years. But I managed to throw in a few good words in the name. But anyhow, when I got there was a great big fellowship standing there waiting for this meeting. And he was an Amishman. He stuck his hand out and he said, how are you, fella? I said, I'm very good. He said, you going to that SOB meeting? I said, yes. He said, so am I. I'm going to see if anybody can keep me sober. Well, he said, you stick right with me. So I stood with him, and we went into the meeting. The guy made the talk. We come out, and this Amishman said to me, he said, see? He said, that's what I tell you. He said, we went in to hear that SOB, and he did make a good lead, didn't he? And I thought, from an Amishman? Well, by God, he was one of the greatest men I ever had to keep me on the track. And I remember, oh, what the hell is the apple thing in Smucker? Old Orville Smucker, he and Mary Smucker come in many, many, many years ago. In the early 80s. But he used to stand in the middle of Orville all day long. He had retired as president, waiting to see if some AA drove through there so he could talk, because there was a restaurant right there. All these things I remember today, because they were good days, and there were tough days. I'd like to say that I learned from meetings. Meetings was my school. I've been told many times in the early years what I did wrong. And they didn't forget to tell you what you did wrong either. And I'll never forget one time I was pretty hot and I liked this guy real well. He was an old timer. I went into his office, he had an office right outside of Cleveland, just to say hello to him. Well, while I was there, two guys had walked out, and this guy never said a damn word to me, and I was there for about 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, he got up, and he walked over to a table, and he got that big business dictionary, a Webster's dictionary, and he come over and he threw it in my lap. He said, "What the hell are you here for?" He says, "If it's sympathy, look it up. You'll find it between symphony and syphilis." I said, "I'll never go back and talk to that old bastard." But I did. So I liked how I came into AA, and I still like it today, because the guy that told me, he said, "Well, I'm going to tell you something, fella, right now. Come hell or high water, USOB, you don't take the first drink." And that's as true today as it was then. Did all the old timers, how they used to be. I'll never forget the guy that told me, he said, "Every day," he said, "you get ready to go out through the door." He said, "Now you got to remember this." He said, "Before you open those doors, there are two tubs outside. One is filled with ice cream, and the other is filled with shit. Now," he said, "when you go open that door, you got up and make your mind." He said, "Are you going to go through the day with both hands in shit or both hands in ice cream?" I said, "What a hell of a way to talk to me." But I believed him. I believed exactly what he said. I don't know why I'm even mentioning all these things. I usually tell you how I got sober. Hell with the rest of them. But I loved every one of them. So that's who I am. I'm Al, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm proud of my going to meetings, and I'm proud of King's School because they treated me royally. They really told me what I better do. And I also, there's many a group, there's one or two groups that was downtown that were old groups. I don't know, I guess they folded up. One was in that church right across from YWCA. Oh yeah, one was Saturday night at the M. O'Neill group. And that had been there quite a few years. And then suddenly something happened that they closed, they sold M. O'Neill to some other company and they didn't want the meeting there. But for years we went there. And they never had a guard or anything. They just had the two watchmen at the door. They never frisked us or anything, so they must have thought we were honest. I'm just sketching this out because I don't really know what the hell to say. But I'll start again. I am an alcoholic, and I'm powerless over alcohol. I have been grateful in that my sobriety depended on me. I went to meetings and still go to meetings. I have been sort of confined in the last couple or 3 years to 4 meetings a week. But I still got the big book to read, all of these things. And one of the things I got is sitting in the first row, a fellow by the name of Kennedy, watch out for him. Old buzzer, he talks to me all the time. Always tells me how to stay on the straight and narrow. And the only damn thing that he can say it for is because he's got a few weeks or months sober, or more sobriety than I got. So I can't talk back to him half of the time. But anyhow, he's a great friend. But learning how to stop drinking is no easy matter. Now first you gotta put in your mind, come hell or high water, SOB, you don't take a drink. And I don't know about the rest of you old timers, but by God, there were some times when that was pretty hard. Pretty hard. But you could do it. And so it came to the steps. And I followed the steps as they were written. Then in 1957, I think it was, or 58, they said to me, we need a speaker for Founders Day. They didn't say that I was chairman of Founders Day, but I wasn't, didn't even know it. So they said, we want to get Father Falk. Well, he was Father John Doe, you know, in the early years. Well, I finally found Father Fall, and he wanted $500 for him. And he wanted steaks served to his followers that followed him from Meads. And he wanted first-rate hotel accommodations, and we only had that one hotel down there, Mayflower. We had another one a little further down, but he might not have went in that one. I'll tell you about that one too. That was my first. They told me never to make a 12-step call until I had 1 year sobriety. Well, I had a year and 11 months, I had 11 months and 2 weeks. And it was raining like hell, and I'm in Barber. And a telephone rang, and the answering service said, Mr. Lackey, will you please take a call for us? And I said, why? He said, well, they call every 5 minutes. So I took the call, and it was a woman. Now, they'd warned me not to go talk to a woman, but she was in the Howe Hotel, and that's where it was down, further downtown. I guess it was called the Howe there, by the theater, or Keith Alvin. Well, anyhow, I get out my car, old rattle trappers it was, 39 Chevy. And I wade all through the damn wet streets up to the Howe Hotel. I walked in and I said, there is somebody calling from this about AA. He said, I know very well. He said, you go up to the fifth floor, and he said, it's in 512. And so I went up to the fifth floor, very confident. And I opened the door, and there stood a woman, stark naked. And she said, did you bring a bottle too, honey? Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you, gals, I run like hell to the elevator. But anyhow, that's the go of the game, you know. I don't know whether she ever got an AA or not. But when I went by that hotel clerk, he was laughing like hell. Like I say, I don't know whether I should tell all that crap or stuff or not. It's because I really have been thinking, how the hell did I really make it? They say I'll be 40 years sober sometime, or near October, when October comes around. And I know Kennedy will agree with this. How the hell we made it, he got it first. I still don't know really the real answer. Except there must be one thing. It must be complete surrender. Now you can go, you can read the big books, you can read the steps, but you have to find the complete surrender. 10 years I looked for it. And finally, in a hotel in Richmond, I was reading the big book. I'd been to a meeting. I was reading the big book, and I read the third step. And suddenly I read all the steps. And that was where I found it. The first step. I am powerless. Yeah. Because even today when I'm quitting cussing, which is every day, I can't figure out how I can be so peaceful to the third signal light from where I live. And somebody goes around me and I say, you dirty. And then I get to where I want to go, I say, well, forgive them, God. They don't know anything either. And that's how I lived my life, and I live it right up to today. So 12 steps is my program. I am powerless over alcohol. If I took a sip of anything to drink today, I'd be right back where the hell I started. And don't kid yourself that I wouldn't be. And maybe I'd never come back. So I don't think drink, and I don't go in places that serve drink. Except if some guy or somebody from the inner group office calls me and says, do you know that down on 2nd Street or 3rd Street in Barberton, there is a young fellow who works at B&W who is in there drunk, and he wants to go to AA, will you come down and see him? Well, I say, yeah, I'll come down and see him, but I just go to the door and I said, you know what I mean? I'm sorry I see it this way. But I said, throw that drunken son of a bitch and bum out the door, I ain't coming in. And you know, the odd part of it is, I've done it 100 times and all those guys are still sober. but I like Alcoholics Anonymous. I like living today. I'm trying to quit lying. I don't lie. I don't lie in the big things. But it seems that my wife is a good cook, and she's always cooking something, you know, and ever poor tweety things, them great fruity damn things and sweet things. And I got a grandson. Well, he is now 7 years old, so I can't pull it so much with him. But she'll say, who ate my chocolate? such. And I said, well, dear, I don't really know. Maybe it was Brandon. But you know, Brandon grew up and now he's 7 years old. And when I come in and eat the stuff that she said don't eat, and Grandma comes in, he'll say, not me, Grandma, I didn't eat it, Grandpa did. But that's how life is today. It's you. And you better like it. Because, by God, it ain't going to change for you unless a power greater than ourselves wants it to. And that's why I like Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the 12 steps are the primary principle in living for us guys and gals. And there is no slip. Anytime that a guy makes or a gal makes up a mind to take a drink, they are taking it because they want it. Now, you may disagree with me. But look, I've been sober a hell of a lot of years, and I've watched that damn Lavache lately coming up, you know what I mean, like that. And then I think about how many times that Budweiser came up like that. And what the hell was that other one? Was made in Detroit or someplace. Always come. Have you tried this lately? Hell no, I haven't tried it lately. So just the other day, I decided to quit watching them damned commercials. But I like it. I like AA because AA taught me the principle of living. And it still continues to teach me that principle. Sure, I don't have everything I want, but I enjoy everything I get. Because what the hell is it going around with, I can't drink. I was to a meeting here about 3 or 4 months ago, and I'm sure the fella didn't think what he said. You know, he said, I've been sober 2 years. Now I can go into saloons. And I thought to myself, for Christ's sake, I've been sober damn near 40 years, and I still can't go into saloons. But that's it. What the hell time is it? I haven't got my watch on. I have? This is the first time. Kennedy, if you want to take the second hour, I'll turn it over to you. So the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous are the true principles of sobriety. As I told you before, the complete surrender step is number one. I am powerless. And this, when you become part of Alcoholics Anonymous, you begin to apply this to your daily living, too. Hell, it's just like I said, I'm powerless over eating cake when I am not supposed to. That's just a silly one, but I am powerless over, I'll say I ain't gonna cuss no more. I don't give a damn what it is, I ain't gonna cuss no more. And 35 minutes later, somebody, hey, what the Lord? I said, you dirty, no good boy. So I'm practicing up to a few words that I haven't used in the last 25 or 30 years, just in case that whatever power it is wants to hear another word out of them. And there is a power greater than ourselves. Do not discard it. You may not understand it, but you do not throw it aside because it is the guidance step. I don't know which one it is, but I'll say step number one because that's complete surrender. You've got to complete surrender. I often think about the 10th step, you know what I mean? That's a powerful step. Powerful step. I forgot how the hell it goes right off the hand, but I know it has something to do with that will straighten me out. Where the hell is it? I got it in front of me, I hope. Never mind it. Oh, yeah. Continue to take personal inventory. You're a great guy, Steve. Damn. But I do read the steps every day because I can't remember them by memory. And I don't think a person should. That is my opinion. I've traveled a lot of time, a great deal in my lifetime. Traveling salesman, a narrator for this or that. And, I think it was back, who the hell was this guy that wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People? I know his name because he cited me for being one of the greatest salesmen in the country in 1938. He didn't see me in 1947 when I was so damn drunk that they fired me either. But those things happen. And now I better get back to the best thing there is. Come hell or high water, don't take a drink. Yeah, that's good. That's good. I remember one time traveling through Virginia, and old Ripes was I thirsty, and it was damn near 11 o'clock when I had to get to this next town. And I was pulling up, and I heard this beautiful music from about a mile away. And there was a nightclub sign there. And it says, come in, and it was one of the bands that I liked, name band. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go in there and stay till they close. And I was going to go. And I got about a half a mile from it, and it says, we serve. There was a certain brand of whiskey I detested. I can't remember what it was now. But by God, that was their main service. I kept right on going. So I don't know whether I had ever would have fell off or not, but I drove to the next town, which was about 70 miles. And that's how I more or less live my life today. Today, if I'm asked to do something, if I can do it, I will certainly do it. I try to be the best grandfather to the kid, although they're, in a sense of the word, I am supposedly be their step-granddad, but they say, well, Papa, we love you. And that seems like it's enough. I don't know who the hell Papa is, but that's what he says all the time. He said, did you know, Papa, I love you? And I got a lot of friends, even Kennedy once in a while likes me. I don't know where the hell we're going to go, Kennedy. One of these days, I guess we'll meet in some other place, I don't know. But alcoholics taught me. I don't know what the hell. Wait a minute. I'll tell you what the hell did happen to me, and then I'll shut up. There was one year I was so down in a damn... Yeah, I do have it. By God, it's almost wore up. I'll share this with you. It was back in 1960. Nah, it was 70-something. That'd be 71, 72. I started to go through depression. And I mean, I went through them. Meanwhile, the company I worked for closed. And that was during the period when you were 46 years old, you were too old. You know, I'd go to this one and that one and so forth. And sure enough, they'd say, you're too old. We don't hire anybody over 40. Well, the more they said that, the more I got down deep in the hole. So there was an ad in a paper for a salesman that I knew that field very well. It was newspaper, wholesale newsprint. But I got up there, and the guy gave me the job, but the general manager walked in just before I left. And this guy said to him, he said, I just hired a man. I think he's quite qualified. And this fellow said, well, I hired a man too. That's the general manager. And he said, he's starting to work today. So when I got down to the sidewalk, I was so damn deep in depression, if it had been a damn snake there, I could have walked under him and he wouldn't have even known. I didn't know what to do. So I ran into a friend of mine, he's passed away now, but he was a union man. He said, I know how you're going, Al. He said, but he said, you wouldn't take a job I might be able to get for you. And I said, how do you know? He said, come with me. We went over to Plain Dealer Building. We went up to 6th floor in the business manager's office. Here I sit, you know, all nice and dressed, salesman, you know. And finally the guy looked at me for a long time and he said, all right, he said, you can have the job, but you'll be here at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, I don't think so much about that, a morning paper, what the hell, you know what I mean? But when I opened the door, I walked in and there was about 18 fellas in there and they were all nationalities, all colors. And I liked the big guy right away because he said, who the hell are you? Well, I wasn't dressed specifically good, but I was dressed much better than they were. And I told them and they talked among themselves and they said, all right, stay here. She can't work in them clothes. So they found an old pair of dungarees, and they found an old pair of shoes. So we started, Tony and I started up on the 6th floor, and I finally found out what they meant that we'll start you. We was to clean every shit house from the floor, top to the bottom, and then clean all the halls. Well, I've seen some dirty trappers, but I'll tell you, that Plain Dealer Building really had them. But I worked at it and worked at it, and I went over to see Harry Ryan about 6 months later, and he looked at my hands, and they were blisters. And he said, what the hell are you doing? And I told him. He said, he said, by God, you went to work finally, huh? I said, yeah. And I stayed with him 2 years. And I mean, I stayed with him. And one day, I had now got a system and so forth. Maybe I'm taking up too damn much time, but I'll tell you anyhow. Anyhow, the general manager came down. He said, Lackey, we want to talk to you. And I said, okay. So I had already cleaned up everything. So I put the mop down or whatever it was. And they said, we came down to tell you that we appreciate your work because you are the best shithouse cleaner we ever had. And I thought to myself, holy tripe, sir, that's what got me. That's where I got. And the guy said, you know, he said, we're going to give you $2 an hour raise. And after they left, I looked up with a power grid on myself, so that's what sobriety got me. Eastern Division sales manager of a large corporation and now the best shithouse cleaner in the country. And they said, I said, well, okay. And about that time, there was a young fellow walked into the, they showed him where I was in the back room. And he said, can you go down to the, that big tall building down there where the railroad offices are? And it seemed like about a year before that, I got on one of their trains and that, it was in Asheville I got on it. But that door come down and hit me in the face. I never thought much about it. And this guy said, well, we think that you ought to have compensation for that because you did stay off of work. Well, quickly, you know how we are. Because my brain rolled as fast. I said, hell, I can't tell him that I didn't miss a day. So he said, but we never seen a doctor's bill. I said, it's because I have hospitalization. I put them all on that. And he talked a little bit and he said, well, our treasurer wants to know if you will accept $1,150 and sign a release. I said, cash? He said, no, but it's a check. You can go right across the street and get the money on it. I said, I'll sign it. And that's how I started over again. And I quit. I worked up and got it all back. What the hell was I going to read here? Oh, yeah. Then I'll shut up, because you can't stand to listen to all my troubles and trials and what the hell ever it was this day. Anyhow, I got in deep depressions, and I had them for 2 solid years. If anybody in here that's going through them. I had an old 39 Dodge. I'd lost all everything I had. I'd lost in that crash in 60 or 62 or 3, what the hell ever it was, I don't know. But anyhow, I decided to commit suicide. Now this had a bad muffler on it. So I drove to Youngstown, drove behind a shopping center, and I turned the key on and it got filled with that blue smoke. I don't know how long I was out, but it must have been, I must have woke up around about 5 o'clock or 5:30. And here I was still alive, but damn near froze. I couldn't even open my finger. And I looked across, and there was nothing open. So I finally got the blood circulating in my hand, and I turned the key on. I went down to Youngstown. And I had a couple dollars, so I got something to eat. And then I thanked the power greater than myself, because my intention was to commit suicide. And that was in 1964. So 3 or 4 or 5 months, somebody told me that they'd been in New York and Bill had asked about me. He hadn't heard from me for about a year. And so I wrote to him about this. And if I can read it, I'll read it to you, then they'll shut up. It says, my dear Al, and like I say, it's WGW, Central Station, New York, New York. And he says, please know that I deeply appreciate having word of you. It's been all too long since you communicated. More often than you think, I have wondered how you are. I remember with the deepest gratitude of your services in the early years of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, it wasn't many of us then. He says, I want to talk to you about the dark nights of the soul, which you are passing through. and a seemingly never-ending quest. It seems like a never-ending quest for light and peace. I am sure that the long continuance of this sort of anguish often gets you down, just as it did me. You may recall that from 1942 until 1955, I was never free, or completely free, of depression. And in some years, this disability was of suicidal proportions. I used to be rather guilt-ridden about this. Why, I asked myself, considering all the advantages I had, should I be subject to this sort of thing? At other times, I blamed myself for the inability to practice the program in certain areas of my life. These and many more reasons for self-downgrading constantly put in an appearance, and at times I became convinced that the depression would never end. But the depression has ended. I haven't had one since 1955. Now that I look back on it, this was altogether a beneficial experience. First off, it taught me that I was a drunk living on borrowed time anyway, and that there was indeed a gift not to be destroyed by myself. I also learned to look at the positive side of my nature, which wasn't bad by any means. I also learned to realize that the responsibilities, my responsibilities to others and to God, no matter what pains and trials there might be. In later years, I also found out that my difficulties, or at least a great degree of them, really originated in physical causes. Probably this is the same case with you. In any event, you ought to quit blaming yourself for having depressions. It is also important not to fear this particular malady, which is one of the most grievous afflictions, emotionally speaking. People seldom go off their rockers with it, and almost always get completely well at some point, providing, of course, one doesn't jump out the window, something I know you are not going to do. And of course, I wish I could say yes to your invitation and I'd be with you on your anniversary. I'd really like nothing better, but I love you, Al, and all that you have done for so many. But in recent times, any travel out in AA has become really impossible. The moment I show up, hundreds of letters of invitations pour in, and of course they have to be declined. It isn't possible physically to do the situation, get into a situation where no exceptions can be made so far as I and my appearances are concerned. True as you may have heard, I did sneak out to Cleveland to hand Sister Ignatia a plaque of appreciation from all AA. But I saw no one except those immediately concerned. This you can understand. Please feel free to write or call anytime and I shall try to respond. We also have a telephone, area 914, Central 24822. And you can call up anytime, collect. So why don't you call up and let me chat with you now and then? Nothing is more certain that you will pull through and that you will be glad of the experience and its lessons later on. In all affection, Bill. He was a great guy. Unfortunately, Dr. Bob had passed away just before I came in. But he gave me many things from Dr. Bob that I get a great kick in reading today. If someone would ever have a Founders Day where they really should explain Alcoholics Anonymous as the two co-founders passed it on to us, they would be very, very surprised. These were the first two pamphlets in Alcoholics Anonymous. They gave them to me. 10 cents they cost then. But anyhow, it was a manual for Alcoholics Anonymous and the second reader. And from those two pamphlets was printed all of the guys that was originally in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I said early, I thought every damned insurance guy in the city was in AA, because every time I turned around, it was somebody shaking my hand. He said, "You know, my business is insurance. What are yours?" I hated to say it, that I was a bum, but I used to tell them the truth. I worked for Babcock and Wilcox, and I spent a lot of good years with them, and was fortunately got out with a nice pension and so forth. And now I don't know what the hell I've been talking about. I've just been talking at random, folks, because these are times when I think that most of us people should know that your day is not going to be perfect every damn day. And maybe some days you don't even know whether you're going to make it. But there is one thing I can assure you. Come hell or high water, you SOBs, don't take the first drink or your butts out of it. Where the hell was the first? This out and out close. I don't remember what the hell he said here. But there was only two pamphlets ever came out of Akron. Years ago I got one of each of them. But I always liked the way here it said, their idea of Alcoholics Anonymous. The definition of an Alcoholic Anonymous: an Alcoholic Anonymous is an alcoholic who, through application and adherence to rules laid down by the organization, has completely forsworn the use of any and all alcoholic beverages. The moment he willingly drinks so much as a drop of beer, wine, spirits, or any other alcoholic drink, he automatically loses all status as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. AA is not interested in sobering up drunks who are not sincere in their desire to stay completely sober for all time. It is not interested in... I don't know what the hell they're not interested in. I can't get the paper unstuck. So anyhow, you see that in the early days, they outlined the simplest program there is to keep sober. And it's just the same today. This one can write a book. This one can say this. This one can say that. But you have to live it. Come hell or high water, you don't take a first drink today. And you can also believe that whatever the power greater yourself that you pick up for a belief is there. And when you read the steps, remember that first step number one is the complete surrender. I am powerless. You know, it sounds silly to get up in the morning and realize that you have done something that, not real wrong or anything, but maybe hurt somebody, and you have to say to yourself, I've got to. It usually happens with my wife, because she bakes cookies and cakes all the time, and I'm not supposed to eat any of them. And I bribe my grandson, I say, see that plate of cookies in there? When you go get one for yourself, bring me one. Grandpa! I said, and don't tell your grandmother. But you see, I like today, because I'm sober today. I don't know how Kennedy feels about it, but I don't know about tomorrow, what'll happen or what will be, but by the grace of the power that has brought us together today, it will be just as good tomorrow. How long have I talked, Steve? 50 minutes? Got your money. Pardon me, Lord, I didn't mean to say that. Then I better shut up. I am grateful for being sober. I'm grateful for this group and all groups, but especially this one. Because when I came to that meeting, I had borrowed 50 cents off of my sister. I don't know whether I told you or not. And these two big bums up in the front, all dressed up, you know what I mean, says, we don't want to hear any tinkle, 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 tinkle. All we want to hear is flutter, 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 flutter. So I'm grateful to tell you tonight that my contribution will be flutter, flutter, flutter. And with that, I'd like to say, I don't know what the hell else to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Al. We'll open the floor for comments right now.